Okay, we're going to get started.
All right.
Okay, that's what I want to see.
We had our own meeting going.
We have an agenda tonight to get moving. Okay, so welcome. We don't have anybody that's outside. Oh, we have one.
Pretty low.
So welcome if you are here. As just a citizen, thank you for coming, and we're going to just move right along. So the first thing is approval of agenda and minutes. So do we have a motion on that?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda and minutes.
So we have a motion by Todd Thorne. A second?
I'll second it.
And a second by Helene. All in favor? We have six in. Are you opposed? Are you in favor?
No, I wasn't here last week.
Okay.
Time, so I don't want to vote on.
Okay, and you didn't look. Okay. So just. Right. So abstain. Okay, great. Eileen, did you get all that? Yeah. All right. So next, we have a wildlife board update, and that is from me. And so I'll try to kind of stick to the issues that were pertinent to our meeting. One. Well, let's talk about the fur bearer rule amendments, and there was quite a discussion here regarding that, a lot by Jeff, and Jeff's not here. One of the issues he was really having difficulty with was kind of the agencies and who was in charge of predator management. One of the things that, and that was a big discussion at the Wildlife Board meeting, those three agencies, in theory, have come together on that topic. It should be noted that, you know, the Division of Wildlife is in control of the device of that take, right, of predator. But we're talking about the Division of Wildlife, Department of Ag, and then the Animal Damage and Control Board. And so what was decided, there was a motion made that there would be a working group that they would accept it as is, but that a working group within those agencies would reconvene in 1 year to look at the effects. And so that was the final decision. And it was, again, a long discussion. Another piece of that was there was a motion to move to research the possibility of a multi-year fur bearer license, and they would look at that and report back in June of 2019. That passed unanimously. There was a move to accept the fur bearer, the rest of them as presented, and that passed. It should be noted that, you know, that meeting is quite contentious. There is a lot of citizens. And it was interesting because it was made by multiple board members that basically of all the people that came, it was kind of split, and it was about a third of each. There was a third that wanted to accept the division's recommendations as proposed, a third that just wanted to scrap it all together, you know, start over, and there was a third that were in favor of the our recommendations. Basically, a lot of the RACs had similar recommendations, so it was kind of an interesting, it's always an interesting meeting. One kind of common comment that I heard from multiple people were, this is the same discussion we've had for 20 years, which is kind of interesting. I don't know, just throwing that out. But it's great to see people there passionate about what they believe in. There was a motion made that the Book Cliffs unit, so we're talking now about lions, switch to a split season rather than a harvest objective, and that passed unanimously, and that was one of the things that we asked for. There was also a motion made to have an inclusion of GPS data on all lions killed, and that passed unanimously. And that was another thing that we talked about. Should I talk about these other ones that aren't really pertinent? I don't think so. Okay. We did talk about, if you remember, there was that motion to increase the Southeast Manti. I think it was 6 permits. I don't know if you guys remember. But we basically didn't split the difference. They're going to increase it by 2. And that passed. That was our recommendation, yep. And that passed unanimously. And then, and you're going to talk about these antlerless permits. So I think we're good to go. Were there any questions about that? So we basically, the Lion Hunters came with recommendations, or Utah Houndsmen, and I think we kind of took their recommendations to heart and went from there. So, but it's a long meeting because you've got a lot of people in opposition to lion hunting, and then a lot of people in opposition to just the tag allotment that the division was recommending. So it went long.
It was the longest board meeting I've ever been to, I think.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was really long.
Maybe.
A lot of public comment.
8 or 9 hours, a lot of comment. 3 hours of public comment, something like that. But again, I think it's great to see people come and voice their opinion and be involved in that public process. Okay. Right. So now, regional update.
All right. Good evening. Thanks for coming. It's a busy time of year. I think I say that every RAC meeting, but it is. Our aquatic section is doing some great things there. Today is a big day for them. They had their second rotenone treatment on Theron Creek. So we had crews, our crew and some people throughout the state came to help us, and we're rotenoning the Theron Creek drainage area, which means it's our second treatment, which means we can start planting fingerling native cutthroat trout in October. So that project will be completed. So that's really exciting. We've also been doing some sampling in Huntington Creek, and we're going to start working on our fall gill netting surveys. And so if any of you are interested in coming out to Huntington or other reservoirs, primarily on the Manti, it's a great time to come out in the morning, and we pull nets that we put out the night before, and we get an idea of what the reservoir is doing, what kind of species composition there is, and how big the fish are, and whether our management strategy is working or not. So if you're interested in specific reservoirs or going on any of those, let's talk and we can get you some dates. Habitat, this is the busiest time of year. It's the time where we do most of our projects. We do some projects in the spring, but most of them happen in the fall. We like to get seed on the ground before the snow flies. And so we have a few projects going on. A lot of these are with our partners, the Forest Service and the BLM and State Lands and CITLA. But there's several bull hogging projects that are going to be happening very soon. We're putting them out for public bid and planning those projects in the next few weeks. We also have, we're also monitoring some conservation easements. As the agency in the southeastern part of the state, we hold 4 different conservation easements. One's in San Juan County for Gunnison sage grouse. One's along the Colorado River by the Dolores, the confluence of the Dolores. One's in Spring Canyon in Carbon County. And I can't remember where that one is. But anyways, we're also working on some catastrophic fire projects. We've had one big fire in our region that we're teaming up with the Forest Service on and giving our recommendations, and that's the Trail Mountain Fire. We're also working on guzzlers, maintaining those and repairing any ones that need some maintenance or some repair work on them. There's JD. Our law enforcement section is always busy too this time of year. They don't get any time off at all the next few months. They're working hard. They're responding to calls. I have heard that the archery hunt's been pretty quiet, but of course that'll pick up as these other hunts start. And then, of course, at Bullfrog at Lake Powell, we're busy. We're inspecting boats that come out and trying to educate people. You've probably seen the news. We've had some boats around the state that have come from Lake Powell that have had quagga mussels on them. That's a concern for us. That means that the compliance is not where it should be. And so we're working on modifying strategies and increasing our education to hopefully increase compliance of boats coming out of Lake Powell and protecting our waters statewide. This is our new facility, actually, our Farmington Bay, our Dolores Eccles, what is it called? That's in the next page. It's the new education center at Farmington Bay. It's named after the Eccles family, who was a big donor. But it's a beautiful new facility there. That's our grand opening we had last week. It's a place where school kids and bird watchers and wildlife enthusiasts can come and learn about the Great Salt Lake and waterfowl and migratory birds and wildlife in general. And so we had our grand opening last week. It was really exciting. We had a waterfowl clinic on Saturday in Emery County at Desert Lake. It was really well attended. I think we had 45 people there. A lot of families came together and to learn about waterfowl. We had several different stations to learn about duck calls and how to use dogs and waterfowl identification and other things. We teamed up with the local Ducks Unlimited chapter to host that event. The state fair is going on right now. We have a wildlife building at the state fair. It's one of the top visited or most visited things at the fair. We have aquariums and we have a pond in the back of the building. Kids can fish for catfish, and it's a big deal. It takes a lot of our resources, but we think it's worth it doing, and we've done it for decades. So we're doing that now again. We do have a fly fishing clinic on September 29th in Price. If you're interested, talk to Morgan. He can sign you up. And then we have a kokanee salmon viewing day at Electric Lake on October 9th. So kokanee will be spawning, and it'll be a good opportunity for the public to come out and see that cool event. Our wildlife section, we're classifying mountain goats on the Los Isles. We were out there last week. The mountain goat population is doing really well. I think we estimated about 80 mountain goats on the mountain. There are 2 hunting tags on that unit this year for the first time. So they're doing well. But we were up there with the Forest Service looking at some habitat assessments and classifying mountain goats. We also did an aerial bison survey on the Henrys at the beginning of August. And we counted, I wish I had the exact number, 60 or 70 bison over what we thought we had. So it was kind of a surprising survey. It was kind of an unfortunate find that we had because we wanted to be at a lower number, especially because of the drought. And because we were 60 or 70 bison above what we wanted them to be, we had to get really aggressive on our hunt permits, which I'll mention here in a few minutes. So they're also doing rabbit surveys. And in the upcoming month, they'll be working on hunt recommendations for 2019, which we'll hear about in November. And they're finalizing CWMU applications and releasing pheasants and chuckers for the youth chucker hunts that are coming up. So we're in an extreme drought throughout Utah, but especially in southeastern Utah. And we give our permit numbers in, I believe, May. Is that right? And so May is always a hard time to give permit numbers because we never know what's going to happen in the summer. We knew we were in a drought all winter long and all spring, but we were hoping that summer moisture would come and relieve some of the drought issues in our area. That did not happen. And so we knew back in May that if the drought continued, we could come to the Wildlife Board meeting in August and increase permit numbers especially for elk. And in this, in our region, in this case, bison, to help reduce some of the pressure on the land. We understand that livestock permittees and the agriculture community have taken a hit because of the drought. And we acknowledge that and recognize that. And we realize that wildlife should also take a hit. I think we also realize that we can grow elk really well in the state and pretty fast too. And we can grow bison. And so with that in mind, we made some pretty aggressive, strong recommendations at our Wildlife Board meeting on August 30th that the agriculture community appreciated. I think they wanted a little bit more, but they were appreciative that we came to the table with the recommendation that we did. And I'm going to just go through these real quick. You can see what the racks and the boards passed on the left-hand column there under original permits. These are the additional permits that we had in our region. The Wildlife Board passed this as presented. And so statewide, we had 723 additional antlerless permits available that the Wildlife Board approved, antlerless elk permits. So those went on sale. Hopefully everyone got an email. You saw the press releases. You saw our Facebook post announcing that sale date. It was last Thursday. It was crazy. I mean, the amount of traffic on our website. I know, like, I had like four phones going trying to get on the website, and it was crashing every time I tried to get on. I didn't get a tag. The computers at our offices are really slow because there was so much traffic. Anyway, so they ended up selling out of those 723 tags in 17 minutes. There was a huge demand for them. So, and it's always good to have a good demand for, you know, the product that you have and manage for. And so anyways, that was a crazy day, but they went fast and now they're gone. So those are how it broke out throughout our region. And if you're interested in statewide, we can let you know statewide. But in addition to that, I mentioned we met with the Henry Mountain Grazing Committee, and they were very concerned about the number of bison that we had. And then when we came back and said, hey, we ran it, we did an aerial survey, and we're 70 bison above even what we thought we had, it was quite the meeting with them. They were, of course, very upset that the bison numbers were that high, and they've taken cuts as livestock permittees, and there was concern among all of us about the range condition too. And so we realized that we needed to be pretty aggressive. And so we proposed to the Wildlife Board, we increase bison permits on the Henrys by 109 additional percent, or 109 additional permits. That's a 99% increase. Most of those 109 permits will come in January. We've never hunted bison in January before on the Henry Mountains, and we've created 4 7-day hunts on the Henrys. And so we'll be calling people in the next week or two or three, people on our alternate list who didn't draw, but every time we have a draw, we have an alternate list. We'll be calling those people on the alternate list and giving them the opportunity to take one of these 109 permits. We're going to be very honest with them. We're going to say, hey, we've never hunted bison in January before. It could be a killer hunt. I mean, as far as being very difficult, you might need snowmobiles. You might need horses. It could be a blizzard. It could be dry. You might have to hike 5 miles. They could be scattered all throughout the winter range. And so we're going to try to give them a very realistic expectation. And we'll see. I'm sure we'll have people take those very easily. If you had 15 points, you might not take one of those permits. But if you had 3 or 5 points, I think you'd take one in a heartbeat. So that'll be interesting. We did expand the hunt boundary just for this year, for that January hunt, to include the Kaparowitz and the Boulders. That's to give, in case those bison get pushed to other units because there's so much pressure, we want to be able to allow hunters to take care of those animals and remove them from those areas. But we're certainly not expanding that hunt unit long term, and we don't want bison in those areas. The last two hunts in January will be hunter's choice, and that'll also, with the idea to increase opportunity, and if there are bulls in areas, we want hunters to be able to take those bulls. So that's all I got. I can take any questions if you have any questions.
So you're doing 4 total? Going to be 2
there's
only, and then 2 hunter's choice?
Yes, there's 4 hunts in January. There were some tags added on to earlier hunts too, but the majority of those 109 tags are going to be in January.
How many permits in each of those do you remember that?
I think there was 22, I believe, in each of those 4 hunts. So what is that, 88?
So 109 was divided between those 4 hunts?
No, so if there's 22, that'd be 88 permits. The other 19 were spread out in prior hunts.
In the general.
Okay. Yep.
When are you going to start making the calls?
I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't seen the list, but it probably should be soon. I think we want to give people as much time to prepare as possible.
You
good luck.
Very good success on those late hunts.
We don't know. We're hoping to have, I think success usually in the 80% plus, you know, maybe 90% plus. Is that right? I don't hunt bison.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't know.
But it could drop, but we're going to, you know, give them that expectation that it might not be as high as what you read in reports.
I mean, I think that much pressure for that long, they're going to get harder and harder as that.
Yeah, I suspect they're already being hunted. Very difficult hunts for the public because they will have been pushed from 1st of November clear till then, and they'll be out in areas that are very inaccessible.
When we call these hunters, we're going to say, "We're gonna give us your email address. We're going to send you a link, and we're going to send them a web page link. They'll open their email, look at this web page, and it'll describe the conditions that they should expect. And then they'll have 24 hours to reply back to us to accept the tag or not. So we're going to paint a very realistic picture of what, and we're going to say, these are not, you don't get your bonus points back, you don't get a refund, this is, do you want it or not? But again, if you had 3 points or 5 points, you might never draw bison, so why not? I don't know. I think they'll go really quick. I don't think we'll have a hard time getting rid of them.
I'm sure they will, because a lot of people that don't realize how tough it's going to be. I've hunted on that late December hunt. Both my daughters drew.
Yeah, they're tough.
And that's a tough hunt.
Mm. I mean, I do like the idea.
Out on the desert.
Right.
Yeah, they're out on swamp mesas.
Yeah. I mean, Kent and I were just talking earlier about Little Creek and how many bison are in there. And I do think the idea of an archery-only hunt to just do some depredation is a nice idea, because you're not going to have that, like, impact and scattering, you know. It's so, I don't know, it's just something to start maybe thinking about, giving more archery tags to, you know, because they just, it doesn't have that dispersal factor that rifles do.
Yeah, we couldn't put a lot more hunters on the fall hunts, because it would interfere
right.
with.
I understand.
So yeah, right. Your point made me think of the other point.
Right. Just.
But archery wouldn't do that. You're correct.
Yeah, because we were.
Except a bison hunter does bring 10 of his friends and all their trucks and such. So it's, yeah, even maybe archery hunters are different. I don't know.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Hey, well, it'll be interesting to see in February what kind of reports we get. I'm interested.
It will be. Yeah.
I have no doubt that people will take the permits. I suspect you'll have a lot of unhappy hunters that'll be coming knocking back.
It's a hard hunt.
Yeah.
Regardless, yeah.
But as long as they know ahead of time and they take that risk willingly, then.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yep. Right. Thank you.
Okay, so next we have Craig talking about fishing guidebook and rule. Here. Nice. Oh, sorry, Randy.
Yeah, I'm actually That's Randy. Close. We're kind of swapping nights close. Around, so it's my night. Last night was Craig's night. Tomorrow's Craig's night. It's my
Randy,
night.
Randy, what's your last name?
It's Opplinger.
Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Anyway, thanks for the introduction. What I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to talk a little bit about the results of a fishing regulation survey that the aquatic section did. And I'm also going to spend the bulk of my time talking about our recommended fishing regulation changes for the 2019-2020 fishing guidebook cycle. But before I get into that, I just want to talk real briefly about how we use fishing regulations. Primarily, we're using fishing regulations to really maximize angler satisfaction and to increase angler use of our fisheries here in the state. Now, there's also times where we're using our regulations to really kind of put restrictive regulations in place to help promote growth of fish, to help increase our trophy opportunities from the state for our anglers. Now, there's also times where we're using regulations to modify harvest to meet certain objectives in the water. For example, if the water is overpopulated with fish, we might liberalize our limits to help promote additional harvest of fish with the goal of just thinning the population out and promoting growth. Now, a couple trends over the past couple years, we've been trying to simplify our regulations when it's necessary and beneficial for our anglers. And we're also trying to make sure our regulations are really consistent with our management actions and our conservation needs that are in place in the landscape. So as I go through our proposed fishing regulation changes, I'm going to try to kind of highlight how each of those regulation changes meets one of those objectives. But before I get into those regulation changes, what I want to talk quickly about is our fishing regulation survey that we did this year. So what we typically do when we want to change our fishing regulations is we go to our regional biologists, ask them what regulations they think need to be changed, and then we come up with a public survey, and we put that public survey out to really gauge angler support of the regulation changes that we're looking at. We did that again this year. So this year's survey ran from May 18th through June 15th of this year. We received responses from 4,718 people, which equates to a 27% response rate. Now, in addition to asking basically angler feedback or their opinions on individual regulation changes, we also got some data on angler behaviors, preferences in their county of residence. And the reason that we did that is we wanted to, that helps us further categorize our results. For example, if we're doing a regulation change on a specific water, we're able to look specifically not just statewide, but anglers who utilize that water and look at their opinions on a particular regulation change. Now, broadly speaking, each of our regulations were well supported by the public. For all the regulation changes, we got survey feedback on each one individually. We basically found for all of them, less than 30% of respondents opposed the regulation changes that we're proposing. There are two exceptions. Those two exceptions is we had localized opposition, so from people who live near particular waters or utilize a particular water, for two of the regulations that we're going to talk about. And for those two regulations, I will put a little time talking into the survey results. But I guess what I'm saying is, broadly speaking, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the survey results because each individual regulation was highly supported by the public. Okay, so I'm going to go into our regulation changes that we're proposing for the upcoming guidebook cycle, and I'm going to begin by talking about our general regulation changes. So these are ones that are applied statewide. The first one I'm going to talk about pertains to the use of corn as bait. So during the 2016 survey that we did, so last time we changed regulations, anglers were asked if they would support the use of corn as bait here in the state. 70% of respondents supported the use of corn. We responded by conducting a pilot study on 8 waters in the state where we allowed corn to be used on those waters during the 2017-2018 regulation cycle. One concern that came up is people were concerned about littering happening because of corn being allowed as used bait. So we've been tracking our littering citations on these 8 waters over the last 2 years to see if there's any kind of uptick in littering as a result of us allowing corn to be used on these pilot study waters. Now, in the current regulation change survey, we asked anglers if they witnessed any negative impacts of corn use on those 8 pilot waters. We had 1,636 people come back and say that they fished at least one of those waters over the last 2 years, and only 3% of them observed any negative impacts of the use of corn. Looking at our law enforcement end of things, we asked them about what they saw pertaining to the use of corn. We found no changes in our littering violations, and also our law enforcement personnel anecdotally didn't really see any impact with corn use on those 8 waters. So given the fact that during the 2016 survey, we found good public support for the use of corn, and the fact that we're not really seeing any problems like littering associated with use of corn, we're recommending statewide legalization of corn beginning in 2019. What this does is it simplifies our regulations and provides a consistent statewide regulation for the use of corn here in Utah. The second regulation change that we're looking at is the elimination of the Lake Powell Reciprocal Fishing Permit. So as it stands right now, if you're an Arizona resident and you want to fish the Utah portion of Lake Powell, you either need a valid Utah fishing license or the combination of an Arizona license and a reciprocal fishing permit that's granted by Utah. Now, conversely, the same isn't true if you're a Utah resident. If you're a Utah resident, you want to fish the Arizona portion of Lake Powell, Arizona takes a valid Utah fishing license. So what we're basically looking at doing is eliminating this reciprocal fishing permit, which would just kind of equalize the playing field and provide Arizona residents to fish the Utah portions of Lake Powell with a valid Arizona fishing license. What we feel is the removal of this reciprocal fishing permit would help increase angler use as well at Lake Powell by providing just a better opportunity for Arizona anglers to utilize Lake Powell. So as a result, we recommend the elimination of this reciprocal permit beginning in 2019. The next general regulation change pertains to the species of fish that are permitted for use of bait here in the state. This applies to our bait rule. This was brought to us by our law enforcement personnel, who basically noticed some discrepancies in the current bait rule. What they basically asked is us to clarify the bait rule and do a slight wording change that specifies that all color variants of fathead minnows be identified as a bait species. And what that does is it makes it a little easier for our bait rule to be enforced by our law enforcement personnel and put some consistency between our management actions and our conservation needs on the landscape. Now, the last general regulation change that I'm going to talk about pertains to our set line permit license age requirement. So our current set line rule requires those who are under age 12 to possess a valid fishing license or combination license in addition to this set line permit. Now, it turns out that set line use is the only fishing activity in the state that requires those under age 12 to possess a valid license. So what we're looking at doing, what we're recommending, is removing the set line rule requirement for those under age 12. What this does, it just creates a consistent rule statewide, and it also makes it easier for those under age 12 to just get out and try to catch some fish. Okay, so now I'm going to change gears, and I'm going to talk about the special regulation changes that we're proposing. These special regulation changes are ones that apply to specific waters here in the state. The first one's actually kind of a broad one, and it pertains to tiger muskie lunge at our community fisheries. What we're looking to do with tiger muskie is we want to begin stocking just small numbers of tiger muskies into a handful of our community fisheries. The reason we want to do this is we want to provide the opportunity for anglers who fish at our community waters to actually fish for a true trophy species. The problem with doing this is we're not going to stock a lot of these tiger muskie into these fisheries, and they're going to have to go in at a fairly small size, so not a trophy size, but probably just a few inches in length, and we're going to rely on them growing up to a trophy size for these anglers. The problem is our current community fishing regulation allows for the harvest of two fish regardless of species. So what we're recommending is basically protecting these tiger muskie and putting a catch and release regulation in place for tiger muskie at our community fishing ponds while maintaining the current two fish regulation for all other species. So again, this is intended to help protect the tiger muskie in these fisheries and provide them a chance to grow up to a larger size for our anglers. So what we plan on doing is basically not doing this statewide, but developing special regulations for each community water where we put tiger muskie into. And what that regulation will be is going to be what I just said earlier. If we're going to put the catch and release regulation for tiger muskie and maintain the current two fish regulation for all other species. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about regulation changes that pertain to the northeast region. We have just one water where we're looking at doing a regulation change, and that water's Flaming Gorge Reservoir. We're looking at two-day possession and a liberalized lake trout limit. So in our angler survey, we found that 17% of respondents opposed a two-day possession limit at Flaming Gorge Reservoir that would allow 8 trout or kokanee salmon in possession, with no more than 6 of those being kokanee salmon, 24 lake trout in possession with 2 exceeding 28 inches allowed, 12 catfish, and 20 smallmouth bass and largemouth bass, and that's a combined total of those two species. So among respondents who fish specifically at Flaming Gorge, 20% oppose this regulation. So there's kind of two parts to this regulation change that we're proposing. The first one is going with a two-day possession limit at Flaming Gorge Reservoir. The other one is a liberalized lake trout limit. The reason we want to go down the road of a liberalized lake trout limit at Flaming Gorge is Wyoming, first off, has already liberalized their limit to 24 fish in possession. So what we're looking to do is bringing our rule kind of in line with what Wyoming already has in place. And more broadly, both the Utah Division of Wildlife and Wyoming Game and Fish is concerned about increasing numbers of small lake trout in Flaming Gorge, and we would like to see the population thinned out, which is going to help maintain that trophy fishery in the lake. Now, as I said, the other part is this two-day possession part. There's currently two waters in the state where two-day possession of fish isn't allowed. Flaming Gorge is one of those waters. So we're looking at basically allowing two-day possession at Flaming Gorge to make it consistent with the other waters in the state. And we feel that this is justified because we haven't seen any biological effects of this two-day possession at any other waters in the state. So just to summarize, in order to simplify our regulations and increase angler harvest of lake trout, we're recommending two-day possession at Flaming Gorge Reservoir with a one-day limit of 12 lake trout, with one of those being over 28 inches. Okay, so now I'm going to move to the central region. In the central region, we have just one water where we're looking at doing a regulation change. That water is Strawberry Reservoir. So as I said earlier, there's two waters in the state where we currently don't have two-day possession. One of them is Flaming Gorge. The second one is Strawberry. So in our angler survey, we found that only 13% of respondents opposed a two-day possession with 8 trout or kokanee salmon in possession, with no more than 4 of those being cutthroat trout under 15 inches and no more than 2, maybe over 22 inches. So that's the same current daily possession limit. We've just doubled it in this particular slide to kind of reflect that two-day possession. If we look specifically among respondents who fish at Strawberry Reservoir, only 17% oppose this regulation change. So what we're recommending is allowing two-day possession at Strawberry Reservoir. Again, this simplifies regulations, and if this one is passed and the Flaming Gorge one is passed, it means that all waters within the state would allow two-day possession. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to this region, the Southeast region. Here we got two waters where we're looking at doing regulation changes. The first one is on a tributary to Pete's Hole Reservoir. Currently, there's a tributary closure. Basically, it's a seasonal closure between January 1st and the second Saturday in July. That was originally put in place to protect a cutthroat trout population that we had some conservation interest in, but that population is no longer a conservation priority for us. So what we're recommending is removing this Pete's Hole tributary closure just to allow angler access to that fishery year-round. The second water within the region is Recapture Reservoir. We're looking at a liberalized northern pike limit with a minimum size restriction. So what we're recommending is the establishment of a 20 northern pike limit with one fish over 36 inches being allowed at recapture reservoir. The reason that we're recommending this is we're concerned about increasing numbers of northern pike at recapture reservoir. We just like to see anglers thin them out a little bit, so we want the liberalized limit. And what we're hoping that this does by thinning them out is it helps increase growth and helps increase trophy opportunities for northern pike at recapture. Next off, I have the northern region. In the northern region, we have just one water where we're looking at doing a regulation change, and that's Cutler Reservoir and the tributaries of Cutler Reservoir. And what we're recommending is reducing the channel catfish limit at Cutler Reservoir and those tributaries from 8 fish down to 4 fish. The reason that we're recommending this is we're concerned about over-harvest of channel catfish at Cutler Reservoir and its tributaries, and we just want to help limit harvest and increase trophic channel catfish opportunities within that fishery. Now, one thing this would be, if it's approved, the first water in the state where we've actually gone with a different channel catfish limit. And we're seeing increased interest in channel catfish here in the state. So what we plan on doing is, if this is approved, we're going to watch this fishery very closely and see how it responds to that reduced limit, because it might help guide future management actions for channel catfish here in the state. Okay, so last but not least, I'm going to talk about the southern region, and we actually have several waters within the southern region where we're looking at doing regulation changes. The first one is the East Fork of Boulder Creek, where we're looking at no limit for brook trout. So one thing that we want to do on East Fork of Boulder Creek is we want to encourage the public to remove brook trout, because we're looking at restoring cutthroat trout in that fishery, and it makes sense because we have to remove the brook trout for the cutthroat to succeed, to ask the angling public to increase their harvest of brook trout to help with those conservation efforts. In our regulation survey, we found that 19% of respondents were opposed to the establishment of a catch-and-kill brook trout regulation on the East Fork of Boulder Creek. But if we look specifically within Garfield County, we found 78% of respondents were opposed to that regulation change. So this is the first example where we had a high percentage of the public in a localized area that was highly opposed to a regulation that we're proposing. So in response, we've kind of gone away with what we asked in the survey, and we're actually recommending a slightly different regulation. So we want to go away from this catch and kill regulation to a no limit regulation. The difference is catch and kill means if an angler catches a brook trout, they have to kill it. A no limit regulation provides anglers the opportunity to release the brook trout if they so choose, but if they want to harvest the fish, they'd have the opportunity to harvest as many as they would like. So just to kind of summarize, what we're recommending is the no limit regulation for brook trout on the East Fork of Boulder Creek. The next one in the southern region is Navajo Lake, where we're looking at a minimum length limit. What we're recommending is keeping the current 4 trout limit at Navajo Lake, but only allowing one of those to be over 22 inches. The reason we're recommending this is we're concerned about over-harvest of splake in Navajo Lake, and this regulation is intended to help protect splake within that water. The next water where we're looking at a regulation change is the East Fork of the Sevier River, where there's actually 2 sections with special regulations, and we're just focusing on changing one of those sections right now. In this one section, what we currently have is a 2 trout limit, and it's artificial flies and lures only. What we found in our angler survey is that only 16% of respondents were opposed to the elimination of that fly and lure restriction on that section of the river, and they were also generally in favor of increasing the trout limit to 4 trout from the current 2 trout limit within this section. Now, if we looked along respondents who fished specifically the East Fork of the Sevier River, 51% were opposed to this regulation change. So what we're recommending in this section is eliminating the fly and lure restriction and increasing the trout limit to 4 fish on the East Fork of the Sevier. The reason that we want to do this is we're concerned about overabundance of trout within the section, and we would like to see more of them harvested. And we feel that increasing the limit from 2 fish to 4 fish and allowing bait anglers to use that water is going to help thin that population out, which is going to increase the size of the fish and increase the fish population health. Now, the one thing we do know is this particular regulation change is a little bit contentious. We know that there's a portion of the public who really wants to hold on to this artificial fly and lure only section. What we plan on doing is keeping a close eye on this regulation change, and if we see any kind of conflict between angler groups, we will definitely revisit this regulation change down the road. Okay, so the next regulation we're looking at in the southern region is on Mammoth Creek. There's currently a section of Mammoth Creek that's covered under some special regulations. That section is no longer available for public access. So what we're recommending is just eliminating the special regulations on Mammoth Creek, just to simplify regulations. We don't see a need in having a special regulation in place on a section of creek that the public can't access. The next one is on UM Creek. UM Creek, we're looking at eliminating all special regulations on that creek. Currently on UM Creek, it's closed to the possession of cutthroat trout and trout with cutthroat markings. The reason that was put in place initially is we restored cutthroat trout into UM Creek, and we also had whirling disease in UM Creek. And what we were concerned about was kind of this double whammy where we were concerned about anglers harvesting fish and whirling disease preventing those fish from becoming established in the first place. So we put this restrictive regulation in place with the idea of telling them to protect the cutthroat and give them an opportunity to get established. I'm glad to say that they're now established in UM Creek and they're doing well. So what we're recommending is eliminating the special regulations on UM Creek just to simplify the regulations and provide anglers the opportunity to harvest those cutthroats since they're doing well now. And the final water in the southern region where we're looking at doing a regulation change is on Paragona Reservoir, which is also called Red Creek Reservoir. This water was heavily affected by the Brian Head Fire. It currently has an 8 trout limit, but a lot of the fish were eliminated because of ash flow after the fire. So what we're looking at doing is reducing the limit from 8 fish down to 4 fish just to help the population rebound after that fire. So that's actually all I have. I'd like to thank everybody for your time tonight. One thing I do want to say is we definitely encourage the public to provide us any comments and feedback that we have on regulations. We encourage people to share their ideas with their regional managers or at RAC meetings, and I'm also providing the email address and a mailing address where comments can be sent. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to take questions if anybody has any.
Okay, so do we have questions from the RAC?
You say question or comments?
Questions.
Yeah, I have a few. The survey that you show, that's a statewide survey, correct?
That is a statewide survey.
And you have isolated in certain areas, okay. Help me understand your survey a little better. You give the percentage of people who are opposed. What are the other choices? I'm assuming it's a multiple choice survey.
Yeah, the choices were rather limited. It was either support or oppose, basically.
Okay. So if they weren't opposed to it, then they supported it.
Yeah.
Using corn as bait. I've always heard and been told the reason that that was illegal was because that the fish could not digest that. Is that still truth, or is that something that's been a myth for forever?
Yeah, that's been looked at, and people have talked a lot about that, this idea that fish can't actually digest the corn. The truth is that they can. I don't know if it's the most or the best thing for them nutritionally, but they can. It doesn't cause any detriment to the fish.
Okay. The muskies being protected on these small ponds, I guess if you're trying to protect them, you allow the use of baits. How many of these muskies are caught with bait that are going to be swallow a hook that can't be released?
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate question, and I don't have an answer to that. Our intention with kind of seeing tiger muskie being used in these community fisheries is actually to be very experimental to start with. So I don't think we're going to put them in a lot of waters. We might just pick a couple of community fisheries, and we're going to watch those fisheries very closely just to see how the fish respond, how they do, that kind of thing. So it's a concern, and if we see that come up, it probably is going to affect our use of them down the road. We might not go down that road if it's not turning into what we hope it's going to turn into.
But you don't have plans to put artificial lures or bait restrictions on those waters that you're planting them in?
We don't at this time, and mainly it's because it's community fisheries that we're trying to encourage kids and other people to use who maybe, you know, like fishing with bait. So I see the concern that you're raising with the tiger muskie, but I think at this time we plan on just keeping them kind of the regular regulations we have right now.
Okay. The Boulder Creek, where you're proposing no limit on brook trout, the localized public survey was very much against that.
Yeah.
I think there ought to be a lot more weight put on that local survey than on a statewide general survey, because I would dare bet that 90% of the people that were surveyed probably don't even know where Boulder Creek is or you know, anything about it. So I guess that concerns me that the division is going against that those localized surveys where it's so strongly opposed.
And one thing I'll say is you're absolutely right. I could absolutely see what you're saying. We modified our regulation from what we initially put out. We had some feedback of people basically being concerned about killing fish, more or less, and being forced to go into that section of the creek and have to kill a fish that they catch that they like to normally catch and normally release. So what we tried doing with the regulation was we modified it. We haven't had a chance to put it out to the public again, but modify it to give people the option to release those fish if they so choose.
Well, and I guess I didn't see the modification because the proposal was still no limit for brookfish.
In the survey that we asked catch and kill, which would be a mandatory kill, we modify the regulation to no limit.
So this allows them to turn them back, but still allows them to
keep them
as many as they want.
Yeah.
So not much of a change. I know a lot of people, and I, for one, would much rather catch a brook trout than a cutthroat. So I can see why those local people who fish for brook trout would be opposed to that. And last question I have, two questions, I guess. The waters that you're proposing to do away with the artificial lure and fly fishing only restrictions, what's the general purpose of that for all of those?
The general purpose for all those is if we look broadly at people who use or prefer to fish small streams in the state, it's about 90% actually bait anglers who like using those sections. So we see primarily it's bait users on these waters, and we have sections of these creeks where we're basically preventing these anglers access to those creeks. Another purpose for it is, broadly speaking, bait anglers typically keep fish a little bit more than fly and lure anglers. And what we're trying to do in a lot of these sections is we're trying to increase the harvest to manage population health, and we see that as being one way of doing it by allowing a group of anglers who's fairly large, so this is about 90% of our stream anglers, and giving them a chance to keep some of those fish to help the population out.
Are these waters, is that a concern where you need to increase the harvest?
Yes, we do. Yeah, well, let me take that back. We have one water where, yes, we would like to see increase the harvest. That's East Fork of Sevier. UM Creek, we haven't had harvest traditionally because we were allowing the cutthroat to become reestablished after we did some recovery efforts. In that one, they're doing very well right now, and we don't see any negative effect of opening up harvest, of what that would have to the fishery.
So if you do away with these restrictions on these waters, what other waters in the southern and southeastern units still have those restrictions?
Honestly,
basically doing away with all of those opportunities for...
You actually are correct, yeah.
Is that a wise choice?
Well, you know, it's something we would have to watch and see. You know, we brought up East Fork at Sevier, seeing if there's some kind of conflict between bait anglers and fly and lure anglers if we were to remove that restriction. The one thing we do feel like is, you know, broadly there aren't any waters in the state where it's just bait only for fishing. So this does kind of create an equal playing field statewide where basically all types of angling groups would have the same number of water set aside for them, which is none. So it gives everybody an opportunity equally to fish statewide.
Those are all my questions. Okay. Probably have some more comments, but
any more questions from the RAC?
Yeah, just curious with the corn. So legal to use corn, but chumming, where does that?
Chumming would remain illegal.
Okay, so you can use corn, but still not allowed to chum.
That's correct.
Why is that?
You know, there's broad concerns about chumming and kind of an unfair advantage, I guess, of using chum to attract fish down to your bait. So that's a general statewide thing. It's not just for corn. It's any bait statewide. You're not allowed to chum, and we're just trying to keep it consistent with all other baits within the state.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, so do we have any questions from the audience? We do have a comment card. So Ken Strong from Sportsman's for Fish and Wildlife, you have a comment?
Ken Strong, fishing coordinator for Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. And Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife would like to thank each and every one of you for your desire to make Utah a better fishing and hunting community, and you're doing a great job at it. SFW supports the majority of what the division has put forth, with just a couple of exceptions. And before I get into those exceptions, I just want to bring up something that came up last night, because Mammoth Creek has not been one that we have talked to on the others, but the landowner that was there to represent has 7 miles of Mammoth Creek that's private property, and he has a problem with trespassing and lack of enforcement on that property. And he's afraid that if it gets opened up to bait, then he's going to have a whole bunch of people in there instead of just the fly fishermen. So he was opposed to that. What we're opposed to is on UM Creek, we agree with the changes of the cutthroat trout, or fish with the cutthroat markings. As Randy said, it will help eliminate, with raising the limit, it will help eliminate a lot of the fish out of the water so that they're not starving each other to death. But we would hope to keep UM Creek flies and artificial lures only. Now, UM Creek is approximately 20 miles long. It goes into Mill Meadow Reservoir, and then after that, it's all bait as it becomes, as it comes out of the reservoir. The East Fork of the Sevier, we would like to also allow it go from 2 to 4 fish. Randy again said that there is a concern with the population of fish. This will raise the limit by 2. Right now, on East Fork of the Sevier River, there are 3 miles of fly fishing and artificial lures only. There are 20 to 30 miles after that that's already open to bait. So if this is done away with and the changes are brought, there will be no waters in, no streams at all in the southern region that have fly fishing or artificial lures only. And last night I did a little research. There's none of our surrounding states that I can find have a bait only stream. So I don't think that that creates a problem. But we would like to see the East Fork of the Bear, or East Fork of the Sevier, to stay as the 3 mile stretch to stay as artificial lures and flies only, and the same with UM Creek to keep that as flies and artificial lures only. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, so comments from the rack.
I actually received an email from Brian Hatch, who is the landowner of the property on Mammoth Creek, and he goes into a lot of detail explaining that the Hatch family is opposed to the change that it is proposed. I've also received a handful of other emails and a couple of phone calls of people who are opposed to this. One of the concerns that was brought up is, and this may be a question for law enforcement, but one of the questions or concerns brought up was the trashiness, I guess, of bait fishermen. You know, you can probably go to any stream and look and tell without even fishing, whether it's a bait fishing water or a fly artificial lure only, because there's bait canisters, worm cartons, fishing line all along the banks. Whereas, you know, the artificial lures and fly fishing only areas are generally much cleaner. And that's also a concern of Mr. Hatch's as well, not to mention the increased trespassing issues that he thinks he's facing. So
that's just a function of how many people are doing it. It has nothing to do with their choice of tools. It has to do with there's a certain percentage of people that are slobs, and the more you get there, the higher your percentage of...
I would agree with that. I've been on some just fly fishing stuff in Colorado, and it's trashy too. Fly fishermen are trashy too.
And I agree with you. There's certain percentages in all walks of
increased
life.
Increased numbers, right, is going to equal, yeah.
But as a general, I guess my concern and my comments would be that, I'm all about opportunity, but I see a lot of changes being made to benefit the use of the general public, where the localized people are just, and their desires are just kind of overlooked. There's sound management and concerns for those changes. If it's just to allow opportunity, I, for one, have issues with that, because I think we need to still provide opportunities for the trophy sportsmen, for those people who want to go and get away from some of the general public to be able to fish these waters. And if there were other waters that had those regulations, maybe taking these away wouldn't be such a big deal. But if we're eliminating all those opportunities in the southern part of the state, I don't agree with that.
Okay. So do you have some specific motions? Do we want to pull out some specific motions?
I have a comment about both. Okay. It may be best addressed as a motion.
Okay.
I think it should be left alone. I know the objective of the division has been for quite some time to try to reestablish cutthroat trout everywhere as much as possible, because it is the only native trout to Utah. I think that's been largely successful in a number of waters. But one of the popular draws of the Boulder with anglers has been the cutthroat trout, the brook trout up there. And I kind of think we ought to leave it alone. A lot of the local people, I know guys that fish up there and do a lot on Boulder Creek and then go up on top on the lakes and everything else, specifically for the brook trout. And it's only one stream in the state. And just, I would say leave it alone as is.
I would second that.
Okay.
Should I make that as a motion?
That would be great.
Okay. I make a motion to...
Pretty it up.
First of all, just one motion specific to Boulder Creek, to leave the regulations in place as they are, and to revisit the idea of eliminating the brook trout and going to strictly cutthroat trout on that creek.
I'll second that.
Okay. Did you get that, Morgan, or do you want me to... Do you mind repeating it one more time?
The motion is to leave the regulations as is
on
Boulder Creek and revisit the idea of eliminating brook trout and going to cutthroat trout only on Boulder Creek. That good? Okay.
So we have a motion by Kent. Do we have a second?
Okay.
Second by Eric Luke. All in favor? I have 5 in favor and opposed. And I have...
Abstaining.
Okay, I have Kirk that is abstaining and 2 opposed, Darren and Dana. Okay. Do we have other motions before...
I will make a motion that we go with the proposal given here tonight to accept the recommendations with the exceptions of keeping the three fisheries, UM Creek, Mammoth Creek, and the east, you might have to remind me which
one. Fork of the Sevier.
Yeah. Keeping, to approve the increase limit regulation, but to keep those fisheries with the artificial lure and fly fishing only restrictions in place.
Okay, so we have a motion by Eric Luke to accept the division's recommendations as proposed, because some of it wasn't just increases, it was using corn.
Yeah, I guess let me add with that exception, also Kent's motion.
Well, that's already a motion. We're done with that. Okay. So to accept the division's proposals as recommended, but keeping UM Creek, Mammoth Creek, and the East Fork of the Sevier, the stretches that are currently flies and artificial bait only, as is. Okay. Do I have a second on that? And I have a second by Darren Olson. All in favor? We have seven in favor. Any and Kirk Player is abstaining.
Can I question? Yep. So on Mammoth Creek, did you reject both the removal of artificial fly and lure regulation and the increase limit, both of those things, or just?
No. Support the increase in bag limit.
Okay.
But
staying with artificial fly and lure.
Okay.
What's that?
With that?
Size limit. Is that?
The recommendation is for.
Basically, just opposed to lifting the artificial fly, artificial lure and fly fishing restriction.
So, as a part of that, we accepted the remainder of the proposal.
Okay.
So I believe we're done.
We are.
Okay. Meeting is adjourned.
No. We have one more guy.
Don't
what?
Do?
Riley Peck. We're doing the Central Region one. Sorry.
I'll tell you what, though. I will be super quick. I know that you're probably just like aching
Riley,
to get home.
Riley, I want to tell you you've already cost me something, but I don't want to talk about it. It's actually Eric's fault, but I'll talk to you later.
Was the bet going on before or what?
Yes, there saying? Was a bet going on before.
Yeah, it's Eric's fault, actually.
It is Eric's fault.
All right. Hey, this will be maybe the simplest action item you've ever seen in Arrakis. My name's Riley Peck. I'm the Central Region Wildlife Manager. This is our mule deer plans for the Central Region. Just as way of background, with every region, including ours, the mule deer plans are in conjunction and are revisited every 5 years. When we redo our range trend studies, and our range trend studies were just recently finished and published in our region at the end of 2017. So now we're following those out with our management plans. The plans are kept within the sideboards of the statewide mule deer plan. That is consistent with all of our plans. There is nothing that we are recommending that goes outside of that statewide plan. Here is just kind of an overview of the area we are talking about in the central portion of the state, specifically Units 16, 17, 18, and 19. Some of the most common questions we always get on our management plans are what we are doing with population objectives. We are not recommending a change to any of our population objectives. Maybe next to that, the next most common is our buck to doe ratios, and as you can see, they're kind of in a good spot right now. We're working to try and reach those and succeeding in most places, but we are not recommending a change for any of our buck to doe ratios either. In the central region, we're kind of unique in that a large portion of our region has a lot of that urban wildlife interface, and so in our plans we have to adjust for that. We have a lot of cities that have an urban deer plan. They kind of own that plan as far as lethal or non-lethal removal of the deer. We also have, as other regions in the state, have a lot of depredation and nuisance, and so our plans address for those as well. We do and are working hard for a little bit more of a collared study to look at disease, roadkill predation, and I guess more specifically, just get at cost-specific mortality, understand what are the limiting factors for our mule deer in our region. Habitat is going to continue to be an emphasis. We will continue with our range trend studies, our spring range assessments. We continue to do range rides on horseback in all of our areas and work through our watershed restoration initiative to plan projects to help improve the habitat where we are noticing limitations. One of the adjustments that we are making, we are recommending amending the statewide deer management plan to include include the south end of the Nebo for a deer translocation site. We have urban deer plans taking place within Salt Lake and Utah County, where out of the cities we are taking live deer and moving them, and we're trying to find a place in our region that we can house those instead of shipping them across the state to somewhere else, which in order to do that, we do need a site in the statewide plan, and so we are recommending this south end of the Nebo for that. And by way of summary, we're not recommending a change to population objectives, buck-to-doe ratios. We are continuing an emphasis on habitat improvement and our cost-specific mortality studies taking place. And just a reminder, we are asking for a new translocation site on the south end of the Nebo unit, which is the Central Mountains unit. And as I promised to keep it brief, that is all I have for you.
You did a really good job, Riley. That's much appreciated. He did a really good job.
Yeah.
Okay, do we have questions from the rack?
Of course they do.
I gave him the look, and he still is doing it.
Is there room to put other translocation units? We've talked with our wildlife biologists here. We would love to see some areas identified on the San Rafael Desert. One of the problems that we run into in the last couple of years with taking transplanted deer was with the heavy snows, we couldn't get to good areas. So right. They turn around and come right back into the towns. We know we can get funding to do habitat projects, guzzlers, and do some work, which I know needs to be done, but can we identify some areas and put that in this plan so that we have that option to have some places that we can get to if...
So let me see if I can take a stab at answering that. You're wanting to know if there are other places in your region that we can bring urban deer and release them. I guess my answer to that would be I don't want to speak for your local biologist or your local manager. As far as the potential of having the deer to release, it seems to me that we saturate an area pretty well within a few years when we do these urban deer transplants. We are not moving a lot of deer, but you start to, when we're talking about those specific areas that I placed on the map, you can see they're not very big. And so I guess potentially the deer would be available. That would be something that would need to take place and be discussed with your specific manager. I mean, Guy does a great job and your biologists are fantastic. And so I think that would be something that I would leave to them to answer. For this recommendation, we are just asking to include one in our region. Is that fair to say? Carissa, do you have any other comment along with that since it is pertaining to your region? I mean, I don't want to speak for them, and I don't want to bring that up. This is an area that it makes sense for us. We have boundaries as far as highways are concerned and the reservoir is concerned, and so it makes sense to us to have that. And I don't know if an area makes sense for you to have or if the biologist even wants it. As far as the deer are concerned, potentially in years to come, I mean, we would want to be done transplanting here.
That's the best stab I can have at answering that question. I apologize if that is a little too vague.
I don't know Wade's answer either. I'd be interested to hear what Wade thinks of the transplants that happened in the last few years. I get mixed feedback from the public when I attend Emory Lands Council meetings and other places. I know we had some success, but we had some ones that caused some troubles too. So I'm not sure long-term if Wade wants to continue that or not, that area.
Well, I know we actually went out and helped, and we darted some of those problem deer that were staying in. We weren't able to get all of them, and I think some of them ended up having to be put down. But I know the ones that we darted and took up to the mountains, one of them went all the way over and into Aurora and stayed almost immediately. One other one ended up back in town about a month later, but the others stayed up there. And you know, it was a heavy winter where we couldn't get them up there, so basically they were dumped just outside of town, and that's where they ended up. But if we had, I know there's habitat. We used to have good deer numbers out there before. There's still habitat. Obviously, the horses and the burros is a problem, and which don't help the habitat. But there are areas that would sustain having deer put back out there. And, you know, if we had, it'd just be, we'd like to see some work being done to facilitate that being done. Now, maybe that's not this year, but we've been after Wade and Brad and Guy to, and they keep saying that it's a possibility, but every time we see something like this and there's that area is not listed, we're wondering why. What do we got to do to be able to do that?
Well, it seems like we address it when our region's
plan is up. Yeah.
I mean, right now it's just the central region that we can't.
And I think the plan does state that area as a translocation site, correct? That's why we did it last year. Or
so there are sites in your region that are already listed, and
right.
And part of this for us is way, not only does it make sense, but it's by way of convenience. Our region is one that moves more urban deer than any. By far, and we get a heavy winter and we can't take them very far and it becomes a problem. And so we need to find not only a place that makes sense population wise and habitat wise, but also convenience in driving them. And so there are a lot of factors for why this site is being recommended. And they are right. When you have the time to have the plan come, your region's plans come up, it may be a time to address that, but we can, I'm sure your biologist would be more than happy to discuss their thoughts on that. I don't.
We've had a lot of discussions, and they're open to it. They just seems like we discuss it and discuss it and discuss it. So, but I guess, and I realize it's a central region, but where it said the Central Mountains, it's kind of I interpreted that to be the Central Mountains. Is it's called the Central Mountains Manti.
So it is the same unit, right? We do share half of it, and until just a few years ago, we were taking those deer to the southeast portion of the Manti. We were bringing our urban deer down.
Yeah.
So
we'd like more.
Other questions from the rack?
No, I was just going to say, to sum it up, we want all of the deer in this region.
Noted.
Okay. Questions from the audience? We don't have any comment cards. Well, he... Oh, okay. Okay. So, Ken.
Ken Strong, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We approve of the Central Region Management Deer Plan.
Okay, thank you. So, comments from the rack. Can we entertain a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the division's recommendations as outlined.
Okay, so we have a motion by Kirk Player. accept the division's recommendations as proposed. Do I have a second? I have a second by Todd. All in favor? 7. All opposed? And are you abstaining, Eric?
I'll abstain.
I'll abstain. Okay, Eric is abstaining.
He wants more discussion.
I know. All right. At that, we are adjourned.